All right, so here we are on the another episode of Mind Sweep. We have another special guest, Jonathan Christos, and me and him go a little back. You know, played some York University basketball. I guess I wasn't really on the team at that time. You know, just kind of out there.
You're on the team.
Yanni, because Yanni came over, he's always like a big bro to me and someone I always looked up to. And you know, I had a privilege of, you know, picking his brain apart when I was young in university. And as Jonathan will attest to, we had a lot of other, you know, black intellects on the team. So I was introduced to a lot of what was actually kind of going on and what they were experiencing. But that kind of took a huge step forward, I guess, in the last few weeks. Jonathan's been on the front lines of a lot of protests around the GTA. I know Nathan Phillips Square, Mississauga, Vaughan, to name a few. Some might recognize his face, unfortunately, with that massive Nathan Phillips Square incident where he held his cool. I will give him that in front of the guy who wanted to come in and cause a kerfuffle, but you can get into that a bit later. But yeah, I know. Thanks again for coming on, Jonathan. It's an honor, especially what's going on right now. We'd love to see what you have to say. And thanks again for what you're doing on the front lines.
No, of course. Thanks for having me again. I know it's been a lot, as you were saying, the last few weeks, and, you know, some people's life is now becoming, you know, news headlines and social media trends. So, you know, I'm glad we have a chance to dive into this conversation, this dialogue, and, you know, unravel some of the truths about, you know, racism here in Canada.
Yep. And that's right away is the fact that some people still believe because, and you tested this actually recently in a video with another individual who had you on about how people think because we have such a diverse culture, and you said this too, that people don't think that we have systemic racism or that racism isn't seen in Canada. And yes, it might be different versus Canada versus the United States, and you have experiences with both, but it's still here. And that's part of the reason why we have such an uproar in protests and, you know, sit-ins and things like that. Because yes, we haven't had similar to the magnitude of deaths that we see in the States, but we're acknowledging that this is going on in our own backyard, and people are still not willing to accept that this is going on.
100%.
So for us, for me, mainly, you know, I've known you for quite a few years now, and me and you got along right away, I feel, because we have these outspoken, you know, charismatic personalities. And that's what, you know, seeing you run these protests, organize these protests, makes me wonder what got you so involved, because this has been going on for years, but something must have, you know, tweaked for you that said, hey, like, this is the time where I need to insert myself.
100%. You know, I guess, like, can't run away from this because, you know, it's on my skin. So every day I'm faced with, you know, racial microaggression, faced with systemic racism, either at school or at work. But I want to say, like, the last few weeks, the reason why I've tried to do more than just expected is because, you know, I feel like enough is enough. Like, we go through this every day, but the fact that it's being displayed on TV of us being killed by police, and it just becomes a news headline and then a social media trend. And then it's kind of like, you know, I see protests in America, and I'm just like, you know, that's coming from a place of pain. That's coming from a place of, you know, rooted racism against their people and the inequalities that they face. And, you know, we see it here too. It's not like we have a blind eye towards racism here and we just don't even think about color. It's like, we got to be realistic because it happens here in Toronto, it happens in the GTA as well. And the reason being that I try to take a leadership role or whatever I can to help. It started in the beginning where the first march I attended was, you know, the March for Change by Nathan Phillips Square. And I was there to support, you know, I just wanted to be involved, help any way I can. I just, you know, wanted to help the movement and push the word more. And then I just felt like, you know, when someone handed me the mic just to ask to help lead the chants, it just came out of me. Like, all the anger that I faced when I lived in the States, encounters that I've had here with the York Regional Police pulling me over when I'm just going for a jog to the gym. All these things that happened to me just built up, and it just came out when I was yelling into the mic, leading the chants. And I felt like, you know, this is just the beginning of what I should be doing. I should be speaking out. I should be, you know, as involved as I can in these protests. And then I took it to the next step where a couple of my friends, we created something called Black Lives for Change. And we created this mainly for Vaughn because being residents here in the city of Vaughn, we felt like we had faced similar, you know, systemic oppression. Like, we just kind of felt like, you know, we can't walk into a store without being followed or assumed of being a criminal. We can't run in these nice neighborhoods to the gym without being pulled over and being a suspect for a home invasion. You know, we can't avoid some of these situations that some of our people have gone through. So we had to create some type of platform to give the Black community here in Vaughn a voice. And, you know, I felt like this is just the beginning. You know, we actually were on the news the other day talking about how the name was actually changed, Benjamin Vaughn Day Civic Holiday. We put a petition forward to change it, and they changed it in 2 days. You know, and it was because that name belonged to a slave owner and someone who was against our people having rights in this world. And we felt like we shouldn't have someone with that type of history represent our people and our community here in Vaughn. So, you know, we felt like that's just a first step. Second step, being a resource of information to help kids with who are going through mental health as Black kids here in Canada with, you know, obviously racism and other mental health problems. I know Matt does a lot of advocacy work on that. And we felt like if we could at least start that conversation, put a plan of action forward, we can actually see changes, not just here in Vaughn, but across the GTA.
And for me too, is what really hits the nail on the coffin is you aren't just on social media. You aren't just leading these protests. You are actually making legality changes and willing to talk with MPs as you were just doing, or looking to, you know, change a holiday. And that for me, I think, is vital in this whole movement in general, is because a lot of people, as we know, will get on the bandwagon to support by sharing posts or sharing stories or images and think that's enough. And it, you know, it's easy to say that we have issues and it's easy to acknowledge it, but what makes an individual make that leap is how can we actually put forward change and what is the solution? And it's nice to seeing you discuss with, I know, our elected leaders. At the end of the day, you are the ones who are paying for the salaries of Vaughn elected officials. And for you to be able to have a voice and express yourself and give yourself as a marginalized individual in that community is what will allow them to see and to actually hopefully put themselves in their shoes. Because I feel that is another point that I feel when talking to people who aren't seen as minorities, is they don't experience that. So they feel that racism is a thing because they're not seeing it, or their friends aren't experiencing it. They have never experienced it. So when I'm hearing your stories, it's like, oh, well, that only happens every now and then. And then you continuously hearing these stories coming out. It's that, oh, you know, well, there's just a few bad apples. And there's every time someone gives a reason why they're experiencing this, there's always a reaction to that saying, ah, well, it only happens a few times. And that's why it's for people like you coming on, it allows us to actually humanize what's going on, because we see on the media, and the media pushes sometimes all these things, oh, they only happened here, they only happened there. But when you have people that we know experiencing this is what really, for me at least, makes it hit home. Because when I'm, you know, when I'm at university and I'm hearing people like yourself or other guys on the team joke about, oh, we can't go here because we pulled over by the police. I never have to worry about that. You know, like you said, being stopped for going for a jog. We had another guest on here earlier for, you know, being pulled over and his car was completely stopped and being said that his license plate expired, even though there's no way you could see his license plate sticker at 10:30 at night. He just had a car full of young Black university students and me in the passenger seat, who you probably couldn't even see from where he was. And, you know, he's internalized that, Jonathan. Like, he has internalized that, saying that's normal. You know, why do our parents, you know, or your parents have to tell you to watch yourself, you know, go in pairs or do these things because you could be subjected to this racism by police that are supposed to be there to protect you?
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you touched on how parents have to be involved. It's like we're training our kids for war, pretty much. And at a young age, you have to tell them this just because you're scared of what they will face when they go out their house. I was just talking to one of the mothers at the protest, talking about how, you know, her son has faced racism in his school, being called the N-word, and kids making fun of him because of his hair. And to me, it's like, being a parent, you don't want to think about having to worry about these type of issues that your kid is facing in school. And then what about, how do you explain it to your kid when he doesn't get a job? Sometimes you want to lead it to, you know, it could be that he was judged before he was even spoken to. And people might think this is, oh, they're just making this up, or this isn't real. I've had an experience where I got an interview just for submitting an application online. And they said, you're Jonathan Christos? It's like, I thought you'd be a Greek guy. You know, and to me, it's like, is that now going to change if I get the job or not? Because she was happy to speak to me on the phone. But when she realized I wasn't a Greek guy because my last name was Greek, she kind of, you know, her attitude and her tone just kind of changed towards me. And I'm always someone to brush it off my shoulder because I figured, you know, God always has another door that's bigger and better. But at the end of the day, it's just not acceptable and it shouldn't be tolerable in 2020.
Yeah. One thing too, I wanted to touch on and bring up is I kind of noticed that you've lived in different cities. You've lived in America. You've obviously, these are things you can relate with seeing it over there compared to seeing it here. And, you know, you look at like these people protesting, you see the passion, you know, you see the emotion, like these are things that have been built up for so, so, so long. And it's like one of those things where people say like, oh, it's just, you know, they're taking attention. They're doing this. It's like, no, like this is stuff that they've been through. This is a lifelong thing. You just talked about parents telling their kids, oh, be careful. Oh, worry about that. You know what I mean? Worry about law enforcement. Worry about. So what are some examples? Like, give some examples of things that you've seen, you know, that have been suppressed. Like, why are people so passionate about this now? And like, what are things that you've experienced and you've seen where it's been like, there is a massive problem here that you think people should know about, you know, as far as the background goes?
100%. Especially when it comes to experiences in the States, I'd say it's more, I guess, more passion. You feel more empathetic towards it because, you know, slavery is talked about hugely in the U.S., not so much in Canada. And many people do have ancestors that were slaves. And many of us in Canada are first generation, our families from, you know, a different country other than North America. And we kind of don't feel that connection towards slavery because we've never had personal connections towards it. But as people are starting to learn now, we have a cultural obligation to those who fought for people who look like us. We have an obligation to continue that fight, not just to reap the benefits of our ancestors fighting the Civil War, fighting against Jim Crow laws with segregation, fighting for freedom after slavery, during slavery. And we can't just reap the benefits and not say anything when our people are being targeted by the police, the justice system, schools. You know, it's getting upsetting the more and more these news come out. It took someone being physically killed by a cop on video, and that victim being a black man and dying in front of people. And it took that being on the news, on social media during COVID-19, when everyone is at, most people are at home. Of course people are going to react. Of course people are, I've had enough of it, because we only talk about it and it goes away. But now everyone is home. Everyone has more time to think of and reflect how they can, you know, step up, how they can be involved. And I feel like that's a silver lining with COVID-19, allowing people to be more in touch with their roots and knowing that their voice does matter in their community and it can make a change.
Yeah.
And to touch about what you said, like experiences in the States versus Canada, there's many stories, but I want to touch on the interaction with obviously law enforcement. I was driving in a black Honda Civic with three other black guys that were, one was my basketball teammate, the other one were my two housemates. And just driving at night, you know, going to go into the city, the next city, just grab food. And we get pulled over for apparently speeding by like 5 kilometers. It was like a joke. He drove by us, saw us, made the U-turn. Obviously, you know what that means, especially if you're black in America. You know that something's about to happen. And get pulled over and we stop. And he has his hand hovering over his gun, saying like, what are you guys up to tonight? And flashes the light in the back of the seat. He says, like, put your hands on your knees. Like, right away, we're seen as criminals, as just because he saw our skin color. And people might say we're over exaggerating, but the news shows that it's not, this is not just a small statistic. This actually happens in everyday life and in Black people encountering with the police. So right away, he thought we were criminals, told us, like, you know, what's in your hand? Because my friend had a cup, asked if it was alcohol, it was just Gatorade. And then the moment I showed him my ID and he saw that I was Canadian, his whole attitude changed. He was nice. You know, he handled it properly. Like, he no longer had his gun on his hand. He tried to make conversation about, you know, our basketball team and stuff. And obviously I knew it was because I'm Canadian. So he figured, you know, I don't want to cause any more trouble, or maybe, you know, to be honest, it's hard. Like, reliving that situation, yeah, it's hard to even understand why he changed, but it's obviously that impacted how he treated us. And coming to Canada, I'm sorry about your friend getting pulled over, but I've never been pulled over by the police in a car. But then it happened to me when I was running to the gym last year and many years before. And being a YRP, York Regional Police officer, in his car, cut me off while I was running to stop me and said, like, where are you running to? And then I said, I'm going to the gym, which is literally down the street. And he's like, you can't go right now. We have to question you because you fit the description of a suspect of home invasion in this neighborhood. I asked him, like, what was the description? Just to, like, dig into him. He says, like, all Black. I'm wearing gray joggers and a navy blue hoodie. So to me, I already told him, I was like, obviously I don't fit the description. But he's like, oh, wait, we got to make a call, make sure. Like, some nonsense. Just held me there for 15 minutes and then he said I can go. And many people think it's like a joke, especially living in Vaughan. They're like, oh, it's nothing. And to me, yeah, it's not nothing, because it's going to happen to somebody else who might react poorly. You know, I just kept my mouth closed and waited for it to be over. But, you know, why do I have to act a certain way in a situation just because of my skin color? I'm proven guilty before I'm innocent just because of how I look. And people need to realize, yes, the states is very passionate. They're very involved because, you know, it's deeply in their history and currently goes on till today. But we have this problem too, and it's not going to go away unless we speak up and stand up for what has to be changed.
You look at really quick, the effects that these individuals have. Like, you just listened to a bunch of these things. Like, you were jogging on the street, you see a police officer by, it's like instant anxiety getting rushed into your system. You know, something that Matt and I wouldn't feel jogging on the street, you know what I mean? And then what Mo touched on when he came on was like the PTSD. Like, you know what I mean? It's just something that we've never experienced, that, like, the roadside stops and all these become so, so much bigger, that adds to potential mental health issues, that adds to the nervous and stressed, and just, you know, you don't feel support from police officers that are supposed to provide safety, right? That's what they get paid to do. So it adds to, like, this whole kind of, it ties everything into a much, much bigger situation that's going on, right?
I guess those two, the frustrating thing, Jonathan, so when that experience happened, after you do that, you're going to the gym, you're distraught, you know, trying to take your anger out on the weights, things like that, and then you go home. Who are you telling this story to? Your family, your friends?
Nobody.
And even if you are, it's like what I was pointing to earlier. Well, son, this is what I told you. This is what I warned you. Right. And that's like how this whole systemic thing comes from, where people don't think that systemic racism is in Canada, but your parents experienced it. So they're trying to warn you that, hey, you might think that you're invincible as a young adult, but you're Black. If you go out there and you don't listen to what they say, or if they come at you and ask you questions, you better answer. Because if you don't answer, then you're going to see the one who is resisting arrest in their eyes. And like you said, you're guilty until proven innocent. And then you got to go through all this just for what? Going for a jog to the gym. And that is something that we're seeing this movement is, and it's pissing off a lot of people. And sometimes you have to take extreme views and extreme measures for people to actually wake up. And you attested to, like, a very good point. Like, I've had some people say, like, you know, COVID, obviously, you know, God forbid everything, you know, people that have been affected. But like, what you attested to is everyone is laser focused in on the media. What is going on is everything is on a magnifying glass to a magnitude that we've never seen before. And now, though, what we're seeing is this whole defund the police. you know, abolish, defund. And I'd love to get your take, because there are so many individuals who have different interpretations. And, you know, I always say sometimes the bite is always, the roar is always worse than the actual bite. And when people say defund the police, defund the police, defund the police, you know, they go get the one black guy who says, oh, defunding the police, that's stupid. Post that video on Instagram or Twitter and things like that and says, oh, see, look, he doesn't think, or she doesn't think, or they don't think that we should defund the police. You guys are crazy and things like that. So I'd love to kind of get your, you know, interpretation of that, what kind of defunding the police looks like to you, measures that you feel that you've kind of discussed with your Vaughan community on how, you know, we can move forward and how do we, you know, create a better life for individuals.
Yeah. That message has been heard almost at every protest that I've been a part of or been there to support, or even the one that we recently organized. And defund the police is very important, just because people feel like we've been asking for changes to be made on how community relationships with the police are. We've been asking for more funding towards mental health resources. These aren't new battles that people are just creating. This has been happening. And now the youth are more involved more than ever, because they are zoned in on social media right now. They are zoned in on the news. And now there's that personal connection that they have with this fight. And I feel like that alone is going to get them drained. Like, so, you know, attached to this fight, them feeling so, you know, like heartfelt when they see someone being shot by rubber bullets or tear gas in the States, or, you know, recently someone was murdered due to a mental health call for the police to come check, and it ended up
schizophrenia.
Yeah, it was schizophrenia, and then ended up the police killing that gentleman. And people are outraged because the police receive over 30,000 calls a year with mental health issues, and they're not trained well to handle that. And we've talked about this. They admit to themselves they have a lot of responsibilities to these calls, and they don't have training or proper training on how to handle encounters with people with mental health issues. And the reason why people are screaming to defund the police is because we see how much of our tax dollars are going towards them and how much of it are we benefiting. It's like a lot of black people are paying to be victimized by the police, which doesn't make any sense, where there can be more funding towards community centers. There could be more funding towards Toronto Public District School Boards, like outreach programs, or, you know, creating some type of after school program where black kids could be a part of mental health resources, especially to have one focus on black mental health, because they are going through a lot as we speak. And the funding is not being applied, like it's not being available for them. And we feel like if we do not defund the police now, they're just going to continue using our tax dollars where other resources in the community that we do need to use are depreciating and not getting enough attention. Because number one, a lot of black people don't even know where to look when these things happen. So that in itself is already a problem, accessible resource. And then those resources and establishments not having enough funding to respond to all these black youth who are facing mental health issues. And it's just going to continue to be a cycle. So, you know, we feel like our tax dollars do need to go towards something that will help our community, empower our people. And, you know, it's almost the closest thing we can get to reparations at this point.
And essentially speaking, trying to stop that cycle. So yeah. When you know, if you are looking to have kids one day, you don't have to have that talk with your young child. Mm-hmm. You know, like we want to build towards that type of life. And, you know, the steps that we've been taking are, you know, let's mend relationships. Like, you know, why defund the police? Because then they're not going to have, they're going to have less resources. How are you going to spend more on training and things like that? Well, you know, if you look at it, almost 80%, 70% of that funding does go towards salaries. And some other organizations, you know, there's that go toward like Liaison Police, right? In school systems, like the Hamilton one, right? Like that's what, and I just recently found that out. That's not paid by the HWDSB, the Hamilton one, the district school board. It's actually funded and paid by the police. So you implementing a program that we have seen as targeting marginalized individuals at the high school, elementary level. And what their response was, we don't have data to support this. And I'm there like thinking, no wonder you don't have data to support this, because then the next statement was, well, it doesn't matter. Like one of the trustees says, oh, well, it doesn't matter because we don't lose any money because we don't fund it. The police do. So if you're sitting there and you're thinking and you have any type of critical thinking, not to be rude, but if any organization is buying and supporting what they want to put out there, do you think they're going to represent or bring up data that might hinder them, might hinder their program, might make their program look bad? If that was the case and that was public information, maybe, you know, years ago when people brought this up, that we could have abolished or gotten rid of police liaison in these high schools and in these elementary systems. But nope, there's no data that's available. So how can we make that kind of basis of a claim? And that's the type of thing where it's like what you're saying, like the funding the police, it's where can we exercise these resources? And the main point that like I got taken out of this, and I'm not sure if you said it on the previous one you talked to the individual, but about having, I think it was about, it could have been in the mental health realm or it could have been in some type of support systems where they're actually Black. And I said this to Mo, and that was the biggest thing for me. And when I was discussing with him about this is, if I'm a psychologist or a mental health worker, how can I talk to you, Jonathan, about racism?
Exactly.
And how can I relate to you on those type of levels? I can't. And unless there's 100 white psychiatrists or mental health support workers and there's not one Black one, then okay, you can slap me on the wrist and say I'm wrong and I'll accept that. But I highly doubt that. And I feel that's where you said like individuals like yourself need to connect with trustees, need to make this, because if you don't look like me, how am I going to relate to you? How am I going to pour my heart out to you? How am I going to let you know how I'm actually truly feeling? If you can't even give me a response of anything that you've been through, it's going to be the same.
And many people like our peers, many people in the schools, sports teams, anyone that we've come across, even in the gym, if we were to tell them our story about being pulled over by the police, many people will normalize it because they kind of feel like, oh, like nothing happened to you. Like, you know, it's kind of like, oh, it's okay. It's just like it happens. And the fact that many kids are sweeping this experience under the rug, and then it can bottle up and then it'll affect how they view the police. And then that can also somehow spark an anger or hate towards the police and can lead to criminal activity. And, you know, I think it's huge connection with mental health, with how these people handle their experiences. Something that I saw online from Cam H, I wanted to read. They were saying that many of these Black populations are likely to have problems with the police because of their elevated rates of violent occurrences in their communities. So some people are product of their environment and they just need to learn how they can take that anger or whatever emotions they have that they're outlashing with and take that and learn how to cope with the issues that you're going through. Have like a mental health advocate like you come to their schools and teach them like how they can, you know, understand their experiences and learn from them and how to move forward in life. And I feel like having Black representation in schools, like a Black guidance counselor, would be so helpful to Black kids who go through these things in their schools and have someone that looks like them who cares about how they feel and has had the same experiences. And until there's more representation on the other side with city council, more representations in the school system, many Black kids are going to feel like they're not being heard and they're not being taken seriously.
You just hit something on the head that just kind of triggered something for me and what Matt initially just brought up. You have a problem, you bring that, let's say, to a teacher or someone of authority, a guidance counselor, whatever, and they try and spit something back to you saying like, oh, you know, it's not that bad. No, that person doesn't fucking understand. They don't get it. So then your problem doesn't get resolved and this change doesn't happen. So that was what you just said was a perfect example of what we can do moving forward. And that kind of flows into my next question for you. What are things that you would like to see to instill change? Like, obviously that was a great example. Like, what are some other things that you feel, because obviously it starts, right, the whole system, like even school, like even coming up And when you open up for the first time, knowing something is wrong, and then trying to communicate to someone and then downplay it, it just contributes to this. So like, what are things that you think that you personally are fighting for, or you may suggest help instill this change?
Currently, I'm fighting, I guess I want to say, for Black history to be a part of Canadian history and the whole curriculum from grade 1 to 12. I've reached out to some of the people who started the petitions, trying to figure out how we can influence Ontario Ministry of Education to implement more Black history in the Canadian history. And, you know, we can only create so many more petitions. We can only have so many of these protests. But, you know, my biggest thing starts with education first, because education is key, and that is towards the future. And these kids, you know, their minds are so fragile, very young, and they need to be guided in the right direction. So if we were to have more Black representation in history books, and Black kids can see themselves while they're reading, like, they might be more engaged, understanding more about their roots and where they came from. And, you know, I feel like that's where it starts. And that can, you never know, like, maybe more Black kids will be inspired to be in politics. Maybe more Black kids will be inspired to join the police force in a way where they can bond with the community, like, you know, open that dialogue. And I feel like once more of these kids can see themselves in the books, they can understand the true value of their skin color. And I think education is number one. Number two that we were really, really fighting for is creating a dialogue with city council, where there's constant meetings of how we can improve interactions with the police. To be honest, we understand many people have fought this fight, and many people are currently fighting this fight. And the only reason why so many of us are creating petitions and jumping on board and being so active is because we feel like we can't help make this change, like, bridge the gap between the people who have been here before and the youth who are passionate, and this will affect them detrimentally. I feel like making that dialogue available from the youth to the city council, like you guys said, you guys were in Hamilton, Matt, and, you know, you were sitting out there for 6 hours until the city council finally made their agreement of dismantling police being in the Hamilton schools. And I feel like the fact that we have to sit outside blocking up a road just so we could be heard is inexcusable. Like, they're building foundations for us to reap, and I feel like we should have some type of say on what we want to experience while we're in the society. I feel like those two are my biggest things that I fight for. Number three, of course, is just accessible information and resources for the kids. Like, I didn't know who to call, like you said, when these things happened. I didn't know who to speak to. Many of our friends who are Black are like, oh, that happens to me too. So it's like, we just normalize it and leave it as is. I feel like there needs to be some type of center or resource where Black kids can call in, can DM, can, like, look up information through, you know, this website. The more resources that Black people have, I feel like the more equipped we will be to handle, you know, micro racial aggression and racism in our society.
And a lot of great points to touch on there. And for me, like, what you're doing is part of what the solution is, like, on the city council level. And like you said, attesting to what we did in Hamilton is that shouldn't be a thing. We shouldn't have to, it's great for the trustees to acknowledge that we were even doing that, sitting outside for 6 hours in the pouring rain. But why is that? Why is that, that picture has to be painted for you to understand how important it is to these kids, you know, how important it is for change, how they just want to be acknowledged. They want to go to school and not feel like they're being judged by people who are appointed to serve and protect them. That is what I also see, the underlining of what your work and what others who are in this fight, who have been in this fight, who continue to be in this fight, the generations of people who feel that change has been made, but then we're here in 2020 and these things are still occurring. And it's just, it's frustrating for me, man, because the reason why I find this so frustrating is one of the experiences, like I said, my friend about being pulled over. And the biggest frustration, and Dan knows, I've said this last time, is that me, as a white male who's seen as at the top of the, you know, social economic status, is more phased and more pissed off about him being pulled over or him being stopped at secondary in the airport than he is. And that was comes down to, you said, about your parents or your family members having to warn you that this is going to happen. It's that I don't understand. And, you know, you may have had more conversations than me, the opposite race, of saying, why can we not come together as a collective? You don't have to agree. Because some people's biggest one is responses, right? And this is part of my next question, is how do you deal with individuals and how do you educate them, as you said? Because I myself and Dan, we don't have all the education. You don't have all the education of things that have gone on for history and centuries and every little detail. And people in this day and age love the media and will give you the responses of, well, look at black on black crimes. You know, well, slavery ended 400 years ago. And they give you those answers, and it's almost like the trigger points where like, why can't you just understand that after slavery, you know, they use the prism as a way, as the 13th Amendment, as people who've seen it, the 13th Amendment was to abolish slavery unless you were essentially a prisoner. And they went on the streets and grabbed up homeless people and things like that. But that's another day if you want to get into history. But it's how do you utilize, I guess, your energy in a way, Jonathan, to ignore people like Nathan Phillips Square, and don't, you know, get violent and don't go and beat him up, which many people have said to you and to me who have shown that video, said they would have done that in a heartbeat. How are you been able to be so calm in this and be that calming voice?
You know, so like you said, slavery ended 201 years ago, but, you know, it wasn't an easy transition to where we are right now. And to understand that this fight has been happening, you know, centuries before us, and to understand that people are still fighting in 2020 for equality, you kind of have to take the spotlight from you. It's not just about you. It's not about my experiences with the police. It's not just about what I felt, you know, judged before an interview, why I'm looked at differently when I walk into a store. It's not about my experiences. And the fact that someone came to a protest downtown dressed as blackface, a white guy, it kind of just showed that people still don't respect that we have issues and there's systemic racism. They don't believe it. They don't think it's real enough. They don't feel like we're rooted to that pain. We don't really have that much of a connection to slavery as a whole. And the only thing I can say is to understand, when you are met with people that don't care about your skin color, when people come into your face with their racist beliefs, you have to understand that how you act will represent your people as well. We have a cultural obligation to people who look like us. You know, there's a reason why most of us are speaking out now. I'm influenced by the people who are speaking out to help and speak out as well. So I know that by me hitting somebody because they have different views or however they view me hitting that person is only going to feed into what they want. You know, they want to make us look violent at these protests. They want us to, you know, act like we're savages, and they want to make us look bad in front of the news. And the fact that I just looked at it as, what benefit, what gain do I have from hitting this guy? What gain do these people have? There's way more of a risk than a reward. So why would I be selfish and act like that? And many people, like you said, on Instagram, whatever, said they would have hit him, but at the end of the day, that's just being selfish. We have to understand that this cause is bigger than us. There's a reason why more people are speaking out now. Don't be upset that, oh, like, why is this guy at a protest now? He's here. Like, we need to unify everybody. I want more people to come to the protest. I don't care if you're not fully on board, if you're on the fence. Come to the protest. Learn. Understand. There's speakers that we bring and other protests that I've seen. There's speakers who have this background, that they've been fighting this fight for 10, 15 years. There are other Black organizations other than Black Lives Matter here in Toronto who have been a part of this fight. And we have to try to be as involved as possible instead of just sharing a story. You know, people like us couldn't drink the same fountain as a white person, you know, 60 plus years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of, you know, Rosa Parks didn't want to give up her bus seat. And that affected the civil rights movement in a big way, just because she felt like that wasn't right for her to give up her seat for someone who was a different skin color for her. She felt like she shouldn't be judged on her skin color. Fast forward, we're still fighting through that fight. So I just urge many people just to, you know, keep using your voice, you know, talk with your friends. As you said, you know, I just had this kind of goal that I thought of a couple of weeks ago, was creating some type of union or connecting multiple Black Lives Matter groups or Black organizations, older, younger, unite us at a round table where we can actually speak about each of our racial issues in our communities and talk about ways that we can work together as a group. They might have city council connections. Let's work with them to get our message across to the mayor, you know, ask questions at these meetings or be involved in any type of way. The louder, the more unified we are, the louder our voices will be. And I feel like our message together can actually carry out the change that our ancestors have been fighting for or other people's ancestors have been fighting for.
I think adding to something, going back to Matt, and like, you know, everything you said is just super, so true. And, but going back to what Matt said about being really pissed off about that incident getting pulled over in the car. And I look back at the recent events and I start seeing you start to be, I think COVID does have a lot to do with it. And also taking the time to understand and learn, you're hearing everybody's stories, you're scrolling through social media, you're seeing it, and you're, people are starting to understand and starting to get it to a degree. But for me, I look at, like, I went to a predominantly white school. I grew up in a predominantly white community. And what I think makes me pissed off so much is that I didn't know these things were going on. And looking forward to the new curriculum, Black history should be taught in schools, should hear these stories. Because I think maybe the same with Matt having that certain experience, like being there, for me, seeing these experiences and now talking to all these people through the Rambler Project and through our communities and networks, it does really bother me because I just never knew. And I didn't, and I could never put myself in someone else's shoes and see that things going on because I didn't know about it. And looking back now, like, I graduated in 2012. These are things, and you just said 200 years. These are, why aren't these things brought up? Why aren't you helping? And that just, and then that can start, you know, maybe you can agree to this, and start getting that snowball effect going on where the next generation coming through, regardless of their color, can start understanding more. And then they can start getting these issues, and you know what I mean, becoming passionate about it. Because now, you know, I was in Burlington, another prominently white community, and I saw the protests. I was at work driving through the protests, and it was predominantly white people. And you're seeing them doing that. And it's just like, so, you know, wow, this is starting to stick. And then that flows into my question now is, do you feel that this is different? Do you feel that, you know, people that maybe didn't fully understand or ignored it the first however many times over the years, do you think people are now starting to understand and starting to get on board? And obviously there's still a lot of work to be done. Don't get me wrong. But do you feel we're starting to move in the right direction?
Yeah, we definitely are moving in the right direction. I feel like the biggest thing is because it's so in your face. It's on social media. It's on the news. You know, many people who have been advocates, even my age, like the last 5-10 years, more people are joining now, like myself, because we feel like we are almost there. We are getting close to the finish line. Let's help. Let's support. Let's push, because this does affect us. You know, it's going to affect our kids. It's going to affect someone that we love. So I feel like, you know, it's also very genuine to see many non-Black people at these protests. Many that I've been to, half of them have been, you know, either white, Asian, you know, South Asian descent. And it's like these guys, they hear us. They feel our pain and they see what's been going on and they're stepping up. So now more Black people are feeling like we're getting more support. Let's all step up. Let's do as much as we can. And I feel like we're almost there because information is very accessible now. And it's, if one person learns something, they can share very fast on social media. Give you a quick example. I didn't know Vaughn was named after a guy named Benjamin Vaughn, who was, his father was a slave owner. He was against the abolishment of slavery. And, you know, the city was named after him. He's never stepped foot in here. And to 2013, they changed the civic holiday to Benjamin Vaughn Day. And 2013, you still don't know that he used to be a slave owner and that's where his name came from. And we just learned this 2 weeks ago, which is why we put in the petition and it changed within the week. It's access to information. Knowledge is power. So the fact that we can find information on names, we can find information on, you know, how, you know, a gentleman who's Black versus a guy white with the same criminal charges, both having different sentences, right? Different parts in the states. And it happens here in Canada as well. So the fact that we have more access to this information, I feel like kids actually know what they're fighting for.
And another one strides. Sorry to make you cut you off there. For me too, is with so much information accessibility leads into kind of another thing I wanted to ask you is, with so much information out there, when you're, as us individuals being white, you know, what do we do, or what can we do as allies to you? Because, you know, we will never be able to understand, for the most part, essentially, you know, going outside and having people look at you differently, right? And a lot of people who might be supportive, but don't know how to show that support, or are scared because they could be saying the wrong thing in support, right? By being offensive in some way. I don't know how, but I know some people are scared to kind of voice their opinions through social media with their family because they don't know how to articulate their points. They don't know how to show their support. And, you know, for instance, for like me, you know, when I'm going to these sit-ins and I'm going to these protests, it's, I'm just sitting there and I will be cheering. I'll be getting in the chants, but a lot of it is me, like you said, just soaking it all in. It's seeing these people's experiences, you know, being carded, being discriminated by police officers, even being raped by police officers. And it's hearing these powerful stories. That's how I am trying to be, you know, an ally and sharing and
learning, yeah.
You know, right? Exactly. And it's, you know, as we all know, I've been a huge mental advocate for years throughout my time at York, people who knew me. And this is part of mental health. You know, it is not only do I want to do this, this is something that as me, I need to do. I can't just be so, and this is something I get in battles, but I can't be so strong-hearted about mental health. And when it comes to things like this, what you're preaching for, Jonathan, it's like you're passionate about, I can't just turn a blind eye. It's not just in my DNA. It's not just what I stand for. And that's where it's like, I want, but how can we, you know, how can Dan and myself, to our viewers, to people who, you know, like Dan said, coming from a predominantly white neighborhood, a white town, white high schools, what can we do as allies and be there?
We need less allies and more accomplices. We need people who are willing to sacrifice what they have. We need people who are willing to get uncomfortable. We're willing for people for people who don't look like us to lose friends and family, who don't have that moral obligation of eliminating racism from our society. If you are, you know, afraid to post something on your account because you don't want to take a political view, which I've heard some people DM me and say, and you feel like you don't want to like rub people the wrong way, and it's kind of like you don't really support the movement. You know, you can like photos and share some things, but you don't really care about this movement because it doesn't affect your life, you know? And we need less people just to share things, but, you know, be at our protest, you know, to help sign petitions, share the petitions, but also have those conversations at home. That's where it starts, you know, get uncomfortable with your parents and, you know, see their perspectives. And, you know, it's sad to say it, but obviously, you know, many of us here in Canada are first generation kids, and it's hard to have that conversation open-mindedly. You know, you got to do that with your siblings as well, your cousins, your friends. You know, that's where you start to get that dialogue going and then unravel people's, you know, ignorance towards racism. Because then once you bring up the conversation, the information follows. And then more people are aware of things and more people have a chance to have a personal connection or be empathetic to a Black person when they are treated differently by the police on the news. It's no longer just changing the channel. Now you see it and you're understanding, like, this is completely wrong. I will not raise my kids to believe this, but I also need to stand up for these people, help add a voice. You know, if I have to help create a petition, but also be there when city council meetings, then you're going to have to come join us. Like, you know, you can't just turn this off like a TV or, you know, scroll on Instagram. I understand people think this is a trend and they think that, oh, some of these people are just standing up now because it's popular. We're getting less news media coverage, so, and where people are still fighting. It's not about being popular or trending, follow it. It's nothing. It's about making systemic changes that will not just affect us, but kids come moving forward. You know, I want to stress it, even in Vaughan, 56% of hate crimes that happen here in Vaughan are victims of Black people. And the fact that that's not even talked about, number one, and it's not stressed to Black families here in Vaughan that they are being victimized by hate crimes, there needs to follow up with harsher hate crime sentences and penalties. This needs to be a priority, not just when someone finally talks out to the media and says, oh, I was a victim of a hate crime. You know, this needs, like, it's just, it's more than just a conversation. It's about being involved. It's about willing to lose what you have, to get uncomfortable. And it's you know, willing to put yourself in Black people's shoes and stand to fight with them.
No, I agree. And I, like I've said, lost followers, gotten arguments because of this, because of a stance that I take. And it's unfortunate. And I remember you attesting this to actually previously, is that good? Like, they, those type of individuals shouldn't be in your life if that's how they actually feel. And essentially, like what you said, that is just turning it off. Like, the privilege, the privilege that we have is when we watch these movies, when we see these stories, when we watch these documentaries, you know, and it's, and I've heard, you know, even my own family saying it's too much. I had to turn it off after an episode or two. Like, just let that sink in, is that we have the privilege to turn it off. These kids or these individuals experienced it, live it. They still live it. And it's nothing that they can just turn off. And because, and if you don't want to be in my life, or you, because we can't agree on simple equality, or, you know, a minority's voice and how they want to be heard and how they are treated, and not just a statistic, oh, it's only 2% of police that are bad. Oh, it's only 5% of Blacks that are actually being, you know, abused by police officers. Who cares? Like, the whole point in is what they just, you just want equality. You want to be seen as the same, so this doesn't happen. Don't hit me back with the argument saying, well, more whites are killed than Blacks. Like, that's not the point, you know? And if we want to be technical, it's, if you go based on percentages, it's still a higher percentage of Blacks based on the population in the United States that are actually being killed by the hands of police. So, but that's, you know, people love that, that clickbait media. And like you said, we have so much information out there, and it's how we can make sure we get the right information, how we can educate our family and educate our friends. And like you said, taking a political stance, what's wrong with that? You know, like, what's
wrong? You're taking a stance on people having the same equalities that you do.
Yeah. And that, in that way that some people just can't accept, because, well, my friends might not think, agree with me, my family or things like that. And then, well, that, yeah, that's part of the problem. That's what we are trying to change going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And having these conversations, you know, it helps push the word forward. It helps open other people's eyes, like your viewers' eyes, to see that this isn't just a conversation. This is something that happens to these people every day. And it's something that we can actually do to make a difference. Like, you know, creating a protest sign and being active is amazing, but you can do more. And the thing is, when you look for these resources, or if you look for these things that you can do, or get into contact with the right people, you will learn how you can be used as an accomplice. You will learn. It's not going to be easy. You just can't click sign a petition. When you start looking for ways to be involved, you will find yourself in the right places. Same how I find myself. I didn't think a month ago this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It just happens. And then you have, like you said, it's just in your DNA. You just feel like you have to speak up. And if you have that moral obligation and you feel something in your heart when you see a Black person being killed on TV, you know that it's not right. So now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And also, I also want to say something too. This is very big for Black people, especially. They have to understand, like, we have a racial obligation to our people. Like, it's in our skin color. Like, yes, we might live in a nicer area, or we might not go through these exact situations as some people in the States do. But other people who look like you are suffering more than you are. And it's because they look just how you look. That's the only defining factor of judging somebody. So you have to feel like this will affect me one day or another, or it will affect my kids or my loved ones. So I got to do whatever I can to put a stop to this ever happening. Even though you personally have it, you got to feel like you have some type of responsibility to help people who look like you and help push the word of equality and justice.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, Dan, you want to ask him something there, or?
Yeah. Just like, even like how Jonathan, like how you just like explained that, what you just talked about, it was just like, it's so empowering, and it kind of translates to, you know, the video of you with the megaphone. And like, for people that are listening to this that don't know Jonathan or haven't seen the video that we've talked about, the multiple videos, like, this guy's holding the mic, this guy's holding the megaphone, the other people with the fists in the air chanting to them, it's so powerful. And that's like, you just talked, like what you just said, like the next generation, like you are like catapulting yourself there and bringing all these people with you. And it's like truly, truly special, man. And Matt and I had a conversation before about like with you coming on, and like this predominantly mental health podcast. But what's going on right now is bigger. and it falls under the mental health umbrella because it is so important. It's so important for people to be educated, to understand, and it kind of ties into being more open-minded and more like educated, and then moving forward, it just like, it creates this huge domino effect with us as a society, right? And now going back to like those videos and like probably the whirlwind you've experienced over the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure this isn't the first interview you've been on, what's been your biggest wow moment of all this? Like has there been a time where you've just been like kind of blown away or overwhelmed, or even just like, I can't believe I'm here in this position, or multiple moments? But that's kind of a question for you.
Yeah. I want to say my first time even being at the first protest for Black Lives Matter here in Toronto, the first time seeing all these people who look like you or people who don't look like you all fighting for the same cause that will benefit you and people who look like you. I feel like as soon as I seen all the people gather, even on Dundas Square, filling the streets, blocking off traffic, the first time ever just being there, you know, before I even was on the microphone, just being there and seeing like, wow, 2020, like we're all out here fighting for this. You know, I've only seen this on TV, or I've only been a part of small dialogues or small little gatherings like that to talk about racial inequality. But to stand there and see people who are screaming, chanting all the same message, to me, that was powerful. Because, you know, whenever I am, you know, supporting a protest, or whenever I'm asked to speak, or whenever me and my team have organized a protest, when I'm speaking, I feel like it's the people who are like speaking through me. Like, I feel like it's like the same issues that we're agreeing, that we're chanting with. The problems that I'm talking about are problems that you have faced, or someone that you know has faced, and problems that affect both of us. So whenever I'm speaking, you know, I don't get to say like, wow, there's hundreds of people who are here. It's more so like, I'm trying to share your message with everyone. I'm trying to share my message that affects both of us with everyone. It's just about sharing our message. It's the people. Like, all the power goes to the people. The more people that are coming out, the more people that are involved, it could be 20, it can be 100, it can be a few hundred. We're all making strides to getting racial equality, to getting justice, to eliminating racism from our, you know, systemically wise, and especially in the education system. We're all pushing these messages for equality. And I feel like the wow factor is seeing how many people want the same thing, Black people and non-Black people.
Yeah, powerful thing too is like what you said is, I've always kind of had this saying in my head. It's like, you're speaking for those voices in the crowd out there who want to say what you're saying, and you're giving them their voice, and that's what's empowering them to speak out. And, you know, a few weeks from now, a few years from now, 10 years from now, there could be those next Jonathans that you're inspiring who are 12 years old, just in the crowd hearing you on that microphone and showing the passion that you're showing, because that's all we can do. Is we can educate ourselves so much, but if we don't even get to portray that to anyone, then our message won't be heard. And some people want to, but some people don't, you know. Some people, it's just not in their DNA to speak out like what you're doing. Like, you grabbed that microphone and took that opportunity and haven't looked back, and you're making changes. And that's why, like, I'm so, you know, excited that, you know, that we're able to get you on here tonight and things like that, because I've known you, and I knew something like this, you know, could have been down your path. You know, your demanding presence, powerful presence, a unique presence, and you know, it's an honor to see what you're doing. We know that there's going to be major, more movements, I'm assuming, for you, and I'm supporting you every time I see you, man. You're my big bro, and always going to support you and be there for you. So unless Dan or Jonathan, you guys have some you know, final words, it's been a pleasure. So you know, Jonathan, you want to say anything before we go that we may have missed, or Dan, then by all means.
I definitely wanted to say it's the people who have been there way before me, who inspired me on projects I've done, Malcolm X, like public speaking projects I've done on Martin Luther King. People who I see on my Instagram before I was getting involved, like, you know, many names I can name, but people I saw them, like, they've been fighting for this, you know, for a majority of their life. And I'm inspired by them. Like, they don't even know it, that I'm inspired by them to speak up, to be at these protests, to organize a protest, to push, you know, change for education with the Ontario Ministry of Education, to push name changes for holidays and city names and street names. Even though people think that's minuscule, it actually makes a difference of how we feel comfortable in our own community. So I want to say it's all credit goes to them, the people before me. I'm just here trying to help push their message and help, you know, unite the youth and people my age to get involved and to keep fighting.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Like, thanks again for coming on. We appreciate you taking time. Like, I know you are all over the place these days, all over the place doing great things though. So I'm honored and, you know, thankful for you taking the time to be with us tonight.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. Thank you guys for definitely having this conversation. It means a lot.
Thanks for tuning in to an episode of Mind Suite. Be sure to subscribe, rate, or check us out at The Rambler Project on all social platforms. See you later.